Alton, this is the Education Subcommittee of Ways and Means. We are here to...
Why are we here?
We are here to hear two bills. Open the public hearing on House Bill 2259 and 2260. And Mr. Wilson.
The agency is here, Early Learning Division folks, to present these bills. These are two related childcare bills. They are linked to the budget in a rather large policy package dealing with new federal regulations and the amount of background checks that the agency will have to start doing in the future. Lisa, if you want to come up to present. Lisa is here this morning. Dawn Woods is unable to make it because of a family issue this morning, so Lisa will be presenting by herself.
David's not going to help her? Okay, welcome, Lisa.
And there is some public testimony, or her presentation is up on the on OLIS.
Good morning, Chair, Madam Co-Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Lisa Pinero, I'm Policy Analyst with the Early Learning Division. Thank you for the opportunity to present House Bill 2259 and House Bill 2260 to you today. These two bills are enabling legislation for the Early Learning Division so that we can effectively comply with and implement the new changes to the Child Care Development Block Grant that were enacted in 2014. As Mr. Wilson indicated, these bills, while these bills specifically do not have a fiscal impact, the fiscal and the financial impact of the division actually comes from the changes to the block grant. And therefore, you have a policy option package 202, which I'll touch on just a little bit later, that is related to it. The bills themselves, as I was indicating, the Office of Child Care is responsible for administrating the funds that are received by the state of Oregon through the block grant. And without those funds and without the program, Oregon virtually would not have a child care system for supports and promoting safe and quality child care in Oregon. The Block Grant Act of 2014 imposed several new requirements, far more stringent requirements, particularly with regard to background checks for child care providers and as well as in other individuals that might be associated with the facility, whether it's a center or a home. Those requirements include fingerprinting everyone, all child care staff members, including staff members who don't directly care for children but may have unsupervised contact with them. It also specifies disqualifying crimes, and different from what Oregon statute requires, the federal government is requiring fingerprinting every 5 years. The new requirements for background checks also include checks of state criminal and sex offender registries or repositories, checks of state-based child abuse and neglect registries and databases in the state where the subject individual has lived within the past 5 years or where they're currently living, a search of the National Crime Information Center, FBI fingerprinting, and a check of the National Sex Offender Registry. Many of these registries are new requirements, and so there will be a bit of an added workload for us as we run those checks. The new requirements also require the agency to make available publicly information on child care facilities and providers through consumer-friendly websites and other ways of disseminating this type of information. Why do we need 2259A and 2260A? Well, as I indicated, we need these statutory authorities to implement many of these new changes. So I will talk about 2259A very briefly. Gives us the authorization to conduct the federally required criminal records checks. It also removes in statute that the enrollment in the Central Background Registry, this is where we store the data for the background checks on our individuals. People are enrolled in the Central Background Registry. It requires that two-year expiration date so that the council can set that expiration and enrollment period in rule so that we can be nimble and respond to the federal government. And so the council, rather than having the central background registry expire every 2 years and then have to have fingerprinting done again in every 2 years, the council can now adopt rules to extend that out to 5 years. This also, just to reassure you, we talked about this a little bit with you in May, and the concern was raised about whether or not that's a sufficient amount of time, or that's too long of a time between when we run criminal background checks on individuals. But to assure you, we run quarterly law enforcement data system checks on everyone that's enrolled in the Central Background Registry. So that amount of rigor will not be changed. It authorizes the council also to adopt rules to define the databases and the registries that we will search through rule, again, so that we can be flexible, respond to any federal changes in those registries. And in addition, it has some technical amendments, just conforming language in statute, in DHS statutes, so that the correct references are made in those statutes. I'll pause to see if there are any questions on 2259 before I move on.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Thank you for the presentation. So we're just voting on the bill, not the additional money. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Follow up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Go ahead.
When did this come from the federal government, the new administration?
This is, Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, this is a result of federal reauthorization of the Child Care Development Block Grant Act that occurred in 2014. That was the first time that grant had been, or that block grant had been amended, revised, and updated since 1999. So these are new and far more rigorous.
Hey, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So we're going to be looking at the POP package or whatever in your budget. So they're helping you, and you're not doing it every 2 years, you're doing it 5 years. So the overall, in the long run, will it help you or cause more? And another question I have is, all the big news this weekend was about the sex offender list for the baseball player. As far as, do we look at other states, or how do we, you know, when we're looking at the sex offender list, are we looking at other states, or how does that work? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, in addition to your first question, the changing it from running background checks, including fingerprints, every 2 years, which is now required in Oregon statute, we would propose letting the council adopt that enrollment period and re-enrollment period by rule so that we can conform to the 5 years that's being required by the federal government. We anticipate that will actually result in savings not only to the state in running those background checks and in the staffing requirements, but also savings to the providers, which we find is going to be a significant impact.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So we could do it every 4 years?
Yes.
And could we, do we have the authority, does the state have the authority to say, you know, the more contact you have, the more frequency you have to have? In other words, they've added who you have to fingerprint now, the casual contactors, whatever, working involvement. So if your rules will be able to address that, and we don't want to overmanage you. But so that would be something you could do. And final question, what's the cost now for the background check that they're describing here? And is there any private operations that we could use to satisfy that without going through the state police or the whatever?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, if I could, let me also respond to your other question about the other databases, the state databases that we search. Yes, we are now required by the federal government, and we do to an extent check the data sex offender databases of other states, and the national sex offender database will be running those searches. And in response to your recent questions, yes, we could, by establishing the authority for the council to address enrollment periods, limitations to enrollment, any of those things that you might have mentioned, we could do that in rule, and that would be could be considered through the rulemaking process. And
cost.
The cost. I do not know whether or not we have the ability to use another entity other than this Oregon State Police and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. I would have to look into that. What I do know is that the state of Oregon has a entered into a procurement agreement with Fieldprint, which is a private entity that is now on contract to capture the fingerprints. So an individual can go to a Fieldprint office and have their fingerprints captured. Fieldprint then processes those through us, through the state police, through the FBI.
Thank you.
And with state police, is the cost still around $40?
With the state police, if I recall correctly, the cost is $12 and is $15, and the FBI is $12.50 per fingerprint for background check.
Thank you. Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Thank you for being here and walking us through this again. We heard this. Representative Lively heard this in the Early Childhood Committee, and we've had you talk about varieties of this before, so I appreciate your continuing to come back. I just wanted to ask a couple kind of structural questions. The registry itself, are you guys pretty confident in the structure? Again, we always like to check with big IT projects in this state, kind of the registry itself, how it exists already, correct? And it's gotten a clean bill of health from the from DAS or from the CIO folks about it is going to be able, it is structured in a way that it is not one of our dreaded legacy systems, and it is indeed structured so that it will be able to go forward and have all this new information, and not new necessarily, but this kind of increased load upon it. Can you speak to that first?
Mr. Chair, Madam Co-Chair, to the best of my knowledge, I understand that the Central Background Registry database is sound, and I've not heard of any concerns about it, and I believe that it is sound, that it can also manage the increased enrollments.
Okay, great. And then next, just looking through in the amendment, the section that talks about making that accessible to other organizations to kind of be able to run things against that. The onus is on those, in the amendment on page 5, section 2 of the amended bill that talks about the DHS shall make records available to this whole list of law enforcement, physician, attorneys, citizen review boards, CASA, et cetera. Is that actually just, I may be have been skimming this too quickly. That may be how the DHS can use it versus how the Office of Child Care.
Madam Chair, can you point me to?
Sorry, yep, page 5 in the dash 3 amendments to 225. That's just what I went on to, just because I figured that'd be the most. Is that indeed the version that
there should be an
A gross. Okay, sorry, yep. All right, then hang. I'll read it again and come back to you on that. I more just wanted to double check early on in that it talked
still,
about.
It's still that.
Oh, it is still that. Yeah. Okay, is about there was some language taken out about doing a Child Protective Services records check with DHS. I'm assuming that's just kind of out of date language.
Yes, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I believe that what we did was we moved that language into another section of statute.
Gotcha.
So that's why you see it deleted there and then added.
Go ahead, Beth.
Okay, moving on.
Okay, thank you. House Bill 2268 is not quite as complicated, thank goodness. This bill simply allows the Office of Child Care to maintain the information that we're receiving electronically and to maintain other information that we already have electronically so that we can better access it and disseminate it amongst the public. It also allows us to maintain the confidentiality of personal information, meaning the name and address of an individual who may be making a complaint against a child care provider or facility. This ensures that they're ensuring their privacy at this point in time, ensures, also helps us regulate these childcare facilities and doesn't dissuade anyone from making these complaints, knowing that their information will be kept confidential. It also, though, at the same time, allows the Office of Child Care to share information with other public entities like DHS and like other investigative police investigators, et cetera, when those that information is necessary to support the health and safety of children. And, again, some technical amendments. So that's House Bill 2260 in a very concise nutshell. If there are no questions on that, I can try to move on and speak to policy option package and its impact.
Questions? Okay.
Okay. As I said earlier, no real fiscal specific to these bills. However, we did notice that we would have an increase in workload as a result of the CCDBG changes and developed that and considered that in development of the 15-17 budget as well as the 17-19 budget. Currently, the Office of Child Care conducts background checks in LEDs through the Oregon State Police on all subject individuals in licensed child care. The query includes, as Representative Wisnett, the Oregon Sex Offender Registry and a Child Protective Services database check through DHS. We also run approximately 28,000 background checks annually and LED scans quarterly on around 63,000 individuals in the database. Approximately 14.5% of individuals applying for enrollment, and this is currently enrollment in the Central Background Registry, are required to complete the FBI fingerprint. With the new changes to the CCDF rules, the requirement for FBI background checks and fingerprinting will apply to all individuals. Policy Option Package 202 has a request for positions. Those positions would serve to accept and process the background registry applications, run the background checks, review FBI criminal history background information, and other state and state databases, including other state child protective service records and state court records. As we discussed with you in May, when we were back here talking about CCDF in particular and the staffing requirements, we had at that time had structured the staffing such that we would be able to process all of the individuals who are currently enrolled today in the Central Background Registry. We have to reprocess those individuals and get fingerprints on them. And that's why we have kind of a real quick, steep incline of workload coming at us. But as we really reevaluated that, we determined that once that happens, that workload will level off. And so in long term, we anticipate some savings there. And in the, on the back of the last page of my testimony, it shows you kind of how we originally proposed in the governor's recommended budget, the FTE that we would need. And this chart you're looking at is specific to the work related to the CCDBG changes. So that governor's recommended budget, we were looking at 24.5 FTE. As we reevaluated, as we learned more about the implementation dates and what the federal government was going to require of us in May, we have reevaluated that and have come up with now 9.50 less full-time employees. And then you add to that, we're now proposing that three of those be limited duration. So we're looking at at a net difference of 6.5 FTE. Permanent FTE. So that's what you will see as a partial consideration of policy option package 202 when the budget comes to you. Also in policy option package 202, we are requesting another funds limitation of $2.9 million, and that is to accept the background check fees and to process them back out to OSP into the FBI. Really, it's more of a pass-through. It's not revenue necessarily coming to the agency. And with that, I will sum that up. And again, thank you for the opportunity. 2259 and 2260 are critical to the agency.
And are there additional questions for Lisa? Mr. Wilson?
Just a couple notes. keep in mind the funding for this package is actually coming out of federal funds, childcare, but what it's really doing is taking money or not using money that presently goes to the ERDC program in DHS, and that's, I mean, there's only so much of the block grant money, and this is now a requirement of the federal government. And then if you could address, there is a proposed amendment that you requested on 2260, I believe. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. I did request an amendment to the bill. It would be important for me to note that. Yes, House Bill 2268, you have a -4 amendment, and that all that does is add an emergency clause so that we can get started on this work right away.
Oh, the Senate loves emergency clauses.
Yes.
If there's a reason.
Yes. Yes, Representative Lively.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Lisa, so the question I haven't, I appreciate all of this and understand the reason. I'm trying to understand, though, if the rules weren't changed since 1999 and we're just changing them, I'm trying to understand, so what happened in that interim? So what I'm trying to get at, how much safer is it or incrementally in relationship to what we're doing versus what was happening? So in the last few years before we started doing this, so were there substantially more complaints and problems in this industry versus what we think we're going to eliminate, I guess, going forward?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lively, I don't know that I could respond to whether or not there were more complaints or not, or what really was the impetus for the reauthorization, other than to say it was probably timely. I can say that the new requirements are far more stringent, and they are intended to ensure the safety of children, ensure also a safe and developmentally appropriate environment for children in child care settings. There's a professional development piece to the Reauthorization Act as well. That's not included in these bills because we don't need necessarily any changes in Oregon statute to do that, but we are ramping up our professional development efforts to meet those requirements. It really is, I think, an attempt to ensure that the dollars that are used from the federal government that are used to support child care are going toward safe, healthy, developmentally appropriate settings, and that providers have the supports that they need to ensure and to provide that.
Thank you. Senator Roblin.
So I want to thank you for all the work you've done. So 2014, they reauthorize. 2014 to now, they go through the rule process back in D.C. When did the rules actually take effect? So when do we have to comply?
Mr. Chair, Senator Roblin, there's some staggered implementation dates within the Act and within the regulations and the rules, and some of them have already taken place. Some took place in September of 2016. The fingerprinting requirements, I believe, are taking effect in November of 2016. I can look it up and confirm that if you'd like. But there are some staggered implementation dates. So
follow up. So the emergency clause basically gets us going at something we should have already had done. So
it gets
with part of it, and other parts will be in position to be able to do the work before they come into
Mr. Chair, Senator Roblin, particularly the emergency clause is important so that we can begin fingerprinting individuals who are currently enrolled.
Okay.
So we can start that work now.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Additional questions? Okay. Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you very much.
And public testimony, is there anybody here wishing to testify on 2259 and 2260, and I don't see anybody on my list, so I guess the answer is no. Mr. Wilson?
Mr. Chair, we do not have permission to or authorization to pass these bills out of sub. They are required, as they're also connected to the budget. These bills will not have any money attached to them. That will be in the full Department of Education budget that we'll consider that time. So that is it for these two bills for today.
Okay. And we assume at some point we will be given that authority, and we'll move them on out because they are essential to meeting federal requirements for early childhood. Anything else come before the committee this morning before we get out early? And see, Chuck Thompson was here on time, and he's going to get out early.
Jeez.
Do we have any information on the rest of the week with respect to the
meeting? There is a meeting scheduled Wednesday morning for Senate Bill 20, which is the conforming ESSA bill, and then Senate Bill 187, which deals with vision screening. Both of those are public hearings.
What was the ESSA bill number?
Senate Bill 20. And
what about 183?
Nothing yet.
Nothing yet. Yep. Okay. We heard 182, but...
No, we heard 183 like a week and a half ago, and then we had to come back for 182 because... Oh, okay.
We've heard them both. We just have to decide which one.
Yeah. Well, actually, you've had a public hearing on 182. You have not had an official public hearing. You had an informational hearing on 182.
Oh, that's a good point. That's what I was thinking. We needed something more. Okay, any other questions? Anything else to come before us? This meeting is adjourned. For us, this meeting is adjourned.